My Guys in the Desert from the South Point Sportsbook on a Friday. Matt Eumanns here. And thanks to Mike Pritchard for hanging around for another 5 minutes. Mike, we have a stacked lineup today, and you're the leadoff hitter here on My Guys from the South Point. We got news off the top about Indianapolis Colts quarterback Carson Wentz out indefinitely with a foot injury. And it's a little bit too early, I think, to play doctor and determine how long Wentz is going to be out. But obviously, at this point in late July, not good news for the Colts.
Not good news concerning a little bit, considering his injury history, too, though, Matt. This guy seems like he's fallen apart at times. Broken back, a rib, ACL, LCL, concussions. And so he's doing a rollout, and he feels something snap in his foot. So you don't, as an athlete, you don't want anything to snap on you. Or at least have that feeling. So I think the Colts are going to re-examine this.
Well, they're going to be in trouble if they have to go to the backups. But we'll talk about that more in depth next week when the NFL kicks off the preseason, the Hall of Fame game, the Cowboys and the Steelers. I always love the Hall of Fame game. Feels like the official start of football season, even though it's a costume party. It's backups in the regular uniforms. Do you think we're going to see many, if any, starters in this game next week? Steelers right now, 1.5-point favorites over the Cowboys, total of 33.5. That's Thursday night from Canton, Ohio.
I don't think so. A lot of guys I talk to, former players, current players over the offseason, Matt, they really enjoyed the fact that they didn't have a preseason. They got used to it almost,
right.
Which is surprising. But you look at training camp now, they're one-a-days, they're about 18 to 20 total workouts or practices that they're going to have. I would be shocked if you see starters out there in that preseason game because you got the joint practices going back, coming back to the league now. And I think there's going to be an onus on that, too. So I'd be shocked if you see a lot of starters in this one.
You know, last year we talked about no preseason. We thought the first couple weeks of the regular season would be sloppy. It really wasn't the case.
No.
Right? So the preseason wasn't missed that much. And that's why I think a lot of coaches, aside from maybe the new coaches like Urban Meyer, are going to hold starters out. We're going to see fewer and fewer starters this year, right?
Absolutely, because you want these guys to be healthy. The last thing you want as a player going into the season is to have a bump or bruise that you're worried about. Like right now, you got guys already taking vet days. And they're 3 days into training camp already with vet days. And so they're going to manage that. And like I said, I'd be shocked if you see starters or frontline players in preseason games. Really, this is for the backups and for guys who are trying to make the football teams.
It's going to really change the way we handicap the preseason. We're also, it's a shortened preseason going from four games to three.
Right.
Except for the Cowboys and Steelers who each play four games. All right, Aaron Rodgers is back in Green Bay. So is Randall Cobb. Mm-hmm. You're a former NFL wide receiver. How big a deal is this for Rodgers to have Randall Cobb back?
I think it's huge. I think anytime a quarterback wants a particular player, it's for a reason. It's not any different than Tom Brady wanting Gronk or Tom Brady wanting Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. It's not any different than that. So here you have Aaron Rodgers who wants a security blanket, a guy that he knows that he can trust and rely on, and that's Cobb. And so I expect him, like I said earlier on our show, for Aaron Rodgers, I expect him to pick up where he left off last year.
Yeah, the Packers over-under season win total was 10. They play a first-place schedule this year, much more difficult schedule. I was saying even with Rodgers, I think 11-6 is a lot to ask.
Okay.
What do you think? Is that win total right at 10, or do you think Packers get over it?
I think they could get over it. Last year we saw this guy becoming an MVP again. And underneath the surface, we didn't have all the information. Obviously, he had a riff with the front office, not on the same page with the front office. And so he stuck it to him, to be honest with you. So if this is his swan song or the last dance or however you want to phrase it, I expect him to play at a high, high level this year.
Okay. Who will be the biggest loser in the NFL this season? This prop is up at DraftKings Sportsbook. Fewest regular season wins. The Texans are the favorites, if you call it that, at plus 250. Lions, second choice, at 7-2 odds. Bengals, plus 750. Then you have the Jets, 8-1. Raiders, 11-1. Eagles, Jags, 14-1. Giants, 22-1.
Yeah.
Well, are the Texans the obvious pick to win the fewest games, or is another team going to emerge as the biggest loser?
I think the Jets, you can factor them in there. They are a lousy organization, certainly. The Bengals, Burrow, I'm not told that he's going to start the season this year yet. I got to find out some more information on that one. But the Texans certainly can't go wrong right there. But I'd take a look at the Bengals and the Jets, though.
All right, Mike. Thanks for sticking around, man. That was a fast 5 minutes.
It did fly. Appreciate you.
Hey, have a great weekend.
You too. Absolutely.
All right. That's Mike Pritchard. This is My Guys in the Desert on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We have a stacked lineup. We'll get to it next. Hi, guys, in the desert from the South Point Sportsbook. Friday afternoon, Matt Eumanns here. Thanks to Mike Pritchard for hanging around for the first 5 minutes to talk NFL betting today. You got to get excited. Football season's here. But, man, what about the last 48 hours with the MLB trade deadline? It's been wild. According to our count here at VSiN, 10 All-Stars have changed teams. It's been crazy. This morning I watched John Von Tobel and Mitch Moss from the Circus Sportsbook on Follow the Money. I watched it on NESN this morning on my DirecTV at home while I'm sitting at the desk. We're lucky to have JVT on the show right now. John, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. You know, I'm a little sad. Andrew Heaney has a new home, it looks like. But other than that, I'm pulling through. Well, Carson Wentz has a foot injury, yeah. So it hasn't been a great few hours for me, actually.
I know there's a lot of news today to catch up on. We'll try to do it in the next 2 hours on this show. Yesterday, it was a trade with the Los Angeles Lakers picking up Russell Westbrook. And this trade has not, I think, met unanimous approval from the general public or the media, and especially from the host of VSiN, the guys who handicapped the NBA. LeBron James playing general manager here for the Lakers, it looks like. And they trade Kyle Kuzma, KCP, and who was the other player they dealt to the Wizards, plus the 2021 first-round pick last night.
Yeah, I don't really love, like, everything that this trade offers, right? Like, if you look at it from the perspective of fit humans, like, I just don't really understand, like, what it means. And, by the way, I think the name we're looking for, Montrezl Harrell, who's
that's it, Montrezl Harrell.
Yep. Potentially on the way. But when you look at it, like, so let's just talk about fit. Like, you're talking about a guy who shoots 30% for his career from three, now joining a potential starting lineup with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Marc Gasol. Like, none of those guys, like, Marc Gasol shoots 36% from three. Statistically, he's their best shooter. So, like, that's a really big problem from a fit perspective, you know? Like, I just don't know how this works offensively. And I don't want to overreact too much right away, right? Because we could sit back here in a month and they fill their roster up with shooters and they stagger the minutes when they're on the floor together. And Russell Westbrook gets a lot more minutes with the twos, even though he's a starter. And, you know, that offense actually looks a little pretty solid, right? They did that with Houston. But I think right now, if you're just looking at overall fit and what the Lakers needed, you unloaded one of your best shooters, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, to get a guy who can't shoot and is just going to jam up your offense. And I don't know how that's a positive for you. The Buddy Hield trade would have been so much better for them.
Yeah, I thought so as well. That was a report from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN yesterday that Buddy Hield was going to be on the move to the Lakers for Kyle Kuzma. There might have been other parts to the deal, but that was the first report. Then it flips, and it's Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell. I like those two players, by the way, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, KCP, the three-shooter that the Lakers probably should have held on to. But 2021 first-round pick last night, Isaiah Jackson from Kentucky. All that went to the Wizards, and the Lakers received Russell Westbrook and two future second-round picks. JVT, let's hear from Brendan Haywood on NBA TV last night. A lot of people caught up in the hype of the Westbrook to Hollywood theme, but not Brendan Haywood.
I love Russ the player, but I'm not sure if this fit works with the Lakers. Russ needs the ball in his hands. He's a guy that likes to play in that mid-range and post-up guards. And there's another guy in L.A. that kind of needs the ball in his hands as well. And both of those guys really aren't good enough shooters off the ball for them to thrive without the ball in their hands. And especially at LeBron at this age, he looked like age was catching up to him a little bit last year. So I'm a little bit hesitant on this deal. I'm not going to say it won't work because LeBron is great, Russ is great, and sometimes great players come together and do great things. But when I initially saw this trade, I'm trying to figure out how does this work.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment there, John, from Brendan Haywood. How does this work? Because you got two guys who are ball dominant in LeBron and Russell Westbrook, and you still don't have a three-point shooter out there. I think the Lakers have got to find a couple three-point shooters. Where did the Lakers rank last season in three-point shooting? Because for the last 2 years, aside from one hot stretch they had in the bubble to kind of help carry them to the NBA title, the Lakers have really struggled from three-point range.
Yeah, they were 21st last year, Yeomans, in three-point shooting, 35.6% of the team. And, by the way, that's with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope on the team, right? And so mm-hmm. He's not even going to be there. Like, and I would say, too, look, there is a way that it potentially works, but that involves Anthony Davis playing center, right? And that is something that he has not wanted to do throughout his entire career. It's something he's been super resistant to. Like, go back to the year that Russell Westbrook was with the Rockets, right? The Rockets actually performed relatively well that season. Remember, they were a sexy pick up at the Lakers themselves in the Orlando bubble. And Russell Westbrook had a good 2-month stretch where he kept Houston afloat, and he was absolutely fantastic. But the problem is that if you're going to put a traditional big out there, it just screws everything up. With Anthony Davis at the five, the four is open back up, and you can play off ball for Russell Westbrook, and you can cut, and you can slash, and you can post up guards to get the ball. And I think that kind of works. But if you're going to do what the Lakers have done since Anthony Davis has been there, which is playing the power forward, then it doesn't work in any way whatsoever. So I think maybe you start to see AD at the five a little bit more. But I will say, like, this isn't an anti-Westbrook thing, because I mentioned Houston. Remember last year, the Wizards go 17-7 over the last 24 games. Westbrook was a big part of that. He's a really good player. It's just a fit thing more than anything else.
All right, this is John Von Tobel, VSiN's senior NBA betting analyst. And JVT, how does it change maybe the way you look at the NBA futures? I'm looking at the Westgate Superbook futures board. The Nets are 3-1, the Lakers 7-2 at plus 350, Warriors 8-1, Bucks 9-1. Your Clippers up there at 20-1 with a big group of teams in that range. The Nets, the clear favorites in your mind?
Yeah, there's no question. Even with this trade, like, I think, you know, with the Nets should be the favorite. You know, the way I was going to approach this, Ubin, I was texting with Jeff Sherman, teasing him a little bit yesterday after this happened, because he didn't seem too happy about it. His Lakers acquired Westbrook.
Right.
But, you know, if this market gets short enough, you know, on the Western Conference for the Lakers, I think it's attacking that two-way market that's offered over at Circa and betting that no. You know, right now it's floating around $4 as, you know, the bodies come in and the season gets started and the hype gets real and the Lakers, you know, we're a Lakers town. I think there's going to be an opportunity to get a little bit of a cheaper price on the no for the Lakers to win a Western Conference or NBA Finals. But I think that's the way to go here. You know, all of these other teams not really set. They're still filling out role players. You mentioned the Clippers. You know, I think they should be a little bit longer than what they are, just because I don't know if Kawhi Leonard is actually even going to play throughout the entire season. But I think the way that you're attacking it with the Lakers is you're waiting for that market to get a little watered down. And I think you're going back in that two-way market over at Circa.
That's a good way to look at it, too. I know Aaron Renning did that last season, bet against the Lakers, bet the no on the Lakers to win the Western Conference, right? Let's recap the NBA draft, John. It was an interesting night, to say the least. It's just, to me, it's fascinating to see how the NBA draft has changed in the past 20 or 25 years. You really don't have, you have very few established college stars who get picked in the first round of the draft. And in fact, actually, it was Chris Duarte of Oregon, the only the second senior to go in the lottery in the past 5 years. And he went to the Pacers last night at number 13. So you have a lot of guys who played 1 year in college or didn't play college ball at all going in the basically in the first round, or especially the top half of the first round. Now, last night you tweeted this about James Bouknight, the UConn guard. He went 11th, and he was minus 1,200. To go in the top 10. That was one guy who slipped out of the top 10 that we really thought was going to rise and be a top 10 pick last night. But was that probably wasn't the biggest draft surprise to you. But if it was, what ranked up there? What were the biggest draft surprises in your mind?
So I think if we're like putting like 1, 2, 3, you got to start with Joshua Primo in Alabama, right? Like his draft position was 27.5, I think is what it closed at, over at DraftKings. You know, not any piece of intel whatsoever had tied the San Antonio Spurs to Primo at all. And, you know, he seems like he'd be a relatively solid player. And, you know, you go back, you read some reports, humans, that the Spurs maybe were looking to move back, and maybe this is why. Maybe they had wanted Primo all along. They just knew that 12 wasn't going to be the spot to take him, but ultimately couldn't find a good enough deal and took him where they were. So I think Primo's got to be up there, just given the fact that his draft position had closed, you have no intel tying him to the San Antonio Spurs. And I think the other, so I had Davion Mitchell over 10.5. It closed at 12.5. And all of a sudden, at 9, you're feeling great. He's not a fit for the Sacramento Kings. They've been tied to multiple other players. Like, they're probably going to get to 10, and then we know that the Pelicans have been tied to other players, so he's probably going over. And then, sure enough, the Sacramento Kings draft Davion Mitchell at number 9, and it's a weird fit, right? They spent a first-round pick last year, Tyrese Halliburton, the point guard, who's a really good player. They have De'Aaron Fox, and now they're going to add Davion Mitchell to the mix, which is really weird. So you're going to see a three-guard lineup there from the Sacramento Kings, which doesn't make much sense in any way that you look at it. So I think that was probably near the top in terms of, like, the two that really surprised you. Because yeah. I just think, like, when you were looking at the intel, both of those really stuck out as not coming out of left field completely.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And Zaire Williams, going the Stanford freshman, going to the Pelicans, number two, surprised me. Josh Primo pick. Doug Kazarian and I were texting about this last night, Doug from ESPN's Daily Wager, and we both agreed that the Primo pick was the biggest surprise. Josh Primo, in his freshman year at Alabama, averaged 8 points and shot 38% from three-point range. One assist per game. I watched several Alabama games. I was never blown away and said, wow, this guy's got to be a lottery pick. But and the Spurs probably reached for him last night. Julian Edlow of DraftKings actually tweeted about Primo's draft position. Sharif Cooper. But Primo was up there as well. Chris Duarte, I mentioned, only the second senior to go in the lottery in the last 5 years. He was the oldest player in the draft. Sharif Cooper, a freshman from Auburn, they both had draft position props that opened at 20.5. Duarte went 13th. Cooper went 48th. And his draft position closed 23.5. So I don't think Cooper falling that far or Primo rising that high were a couple things that were that predictable. But the NBA draft is always going to be have a couple of surprises, and that's just a reminder, the draft props, JBT, can sometimes be way off, and I think draft betting, whether it's the NFL draft, NBA draft, can present some great opportunities. I think you did well on draft betting last night, right?
Yeah, you know, the King screwed me on two picks, Davion Mitchell, and then how about this? Right. How about getting beat by two teams, by the same team twice, Davion Mitchell, and then I had the Myas Kata units over his draft position prop, and the Sacramento Kings draft him in the second round in the 30s. But, no, it was a relatively decent night for me, but I think you're right. Like, look, there's a reason, Mitch and I talked about this the other day, and yeah, I've talked to you about this multiple times. There's a reason, you know, the bookmakers can't really get away with not putting up props on the NFL draft because it's so widely popular. The NBA draft, we saw multiple shops chose not to even book it at all in the state of Nevada. You know, I give Johnny Vo a lot of credit. We talked to him a couple of days ago on Follow the Money. They had props up since the start of July. And one of the things that, you know, that Mitch and I talked about at the beginning of the month when I filled in on one of the shows was they had Jalen Green at the odds on favor to go 3. They had Evan Mobley at the odds on favor to go 2. And I told Mitch that should be flipped. You could have gotten plus prices on either one of those two if you started to read the intel early of what was going to happen. And sure enough, what happens? You get Jalen Green close over $6. You get Evan Mobley close well over $4 to go in those two spots. But it's all informational based. It's one of the events where you can find as a better one of your biggest edges. Give you another example, right? Jalen Johnson. Every piece of intel had been like Jalen Johnson, character issues, don't really love it, doesn't seem committed to like really much anything. He went to two different high schools. We know what happened at Duke. He's not going to go in the lottery, but his position was 14.5. So you're essentially saying, is he going to be a lottery pick or is he not? I said no, and sure enough, he didn't even sniff it. He ended up going 20 to the Atlanta Hawks. So like the information's out there. There's a lot of it. You got to sift through a lot of it, and I'll give you one more example. Moses Moody was an interesting guy because if you looked at a lot of the mock drafts of Moses Moody, he had consistently been moving up the board. Like every new mock draft that came out from pundits, Moses Moody would go from like 14 to 12 to 11 to 10. And sure enough, his draft position prop closed at 10.5. But what happens? He slides all the way down to the bottom of the lottery, and he goes way over his draft position prop at 14. But why I bring that up is when you read the mock drafts, there was not a piece of intel that said, I'm hearing the magic like Moses Moody. I'm hearing the Warriors want to get in on Moses Moody. It was just, hey, he fits this offense. Hey, he fits this offense. Well, that's not information. And so that gives you an idea of maybe this is just a, hey, this is speculation as opposed to solid information. And sure enough, he goes way over his draft position.
Follow him on Twitter, @MeJVT. Listen to Hardwood Handicappers podcast. Go to vsin.com. Jonathan Von Tobel. All right, let's look at our five favorite picks in the NBA draft last night. I asked Tim Murray to weigh in on this, you as well. I've got James Bouknight going 11th to the Hornets, Chris Duarte going 13th to the Pacers, the guy you just mentioned, Moses Moody, 14th to the Warriors. I like that pick a lot. 42nd, Isaiah Livers from Michigan to the Pistons, and I went ahead and threw in Luka Garza, the consensus college player of the year, went 52nd overall. He's going to give you 100% effort. He's going to play hard. He's going to be a rotation guy. I didn't want to pick the same list as you and Tim Murray. We all, I think, liked a lot of these similar picks last night. Who were your top five?
Yeah, Jay, I did a couple of that pair at the top. But Jalen Green and Usman Garabu for the Houston Rockets. I really like what the Rockets are starting to put together from a talent perspective. Jalen Green fits what they need. They're old and geriatric in the backcourt. He's really going to help them out. Pair up nicely with Kevin Porter Jr. Like, they got some sneaky good young talent in Houston, along with Chris Wood, as you and I both know. So I really like that. And Usman Garabu, anybody wants to watch him play, he's playing for the Spanish team in the Olympics. Really solid defender. Can handle a little bit, get out in transition. Insanely athletic. He's going to be a really good piece for them. Jalen Suggs is a steal. I mean, that's a bad offensive team. Humans needed a lot in the backcourt. Right. Jalen Suggs is a dynamic pick for them. Awesome athlete as well. I like Trey Murphy a lot to New Orleans. You know, New Orleans filled the need. One of the worst shooting teams in the league last year. Most inconsistent, and you arguably get the best shooter in the draft in Trey Murphy the third. You mentioned Booknight. I echo all of that. I think he fits really well alongside LaMelo Ball. And then Corey Kispert with Washington, mainly because I think Kispert's one of those guys, right? His floor is already there, so he's not going to be – like, he's going to come in. He's going to be really solid. Doesn't have a very high ceiling, but you can plug him in right away. For a team that really needs some more offensive pop, they got rid of Russell Westbrook, I think it fits really nice.
You can see the graphic there on the screen, the high five, our five favorite picks in the draft. And JVT, I agree with you on three of those. I'm not that I disagree on any of them, but I was going to put Suggs, Booknight, and Kispert on my list as well. Just change it a little bit. Tim Murray weighed in last night with Jalen Suggs, James Booknight, Corey Kispert. AU DeSone moved from Illinois to the Bulls. I know a lot of Bulls fans are happy to get the Chicago high school product. And Jared Butler from the Jazz, he said he wanted to change that to Cam Thomas to the Brooklyn Nets. You like that Cam Thomas pick? Is he going to help the Nets?
Yeah, I think so. And you get rid of Landry Shamet, right? Then you get right. A younger, cheaper guy that can do everything. So I like it a lot.
Hey, thanks for jumping on, man. Appreciate the time, and have a great weekend.
You got it, dude. Talk to you soon.
All right. That's Jonathan Von Tobel. Quick break. We come back. We're going to wrap up the MLB trade deadline next. From the OddsTrader.com studio at Circa. Actually, this is the South Point Hotel. I'm not at Circa today. I'm at the South Point. Go to OddsTrader.com. Download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up to the second info you need. We have an OddsTrader.com studio here at the South Point, and I guess occasionally at the Circa as well. And that's irrelevant. Just go to OddsTrader.com. All right, we're going to recap everything that happened with the MLB trade deadline. And man, it's been a wild 48 hours. That was one of my favorite movies, by the way, with Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte. But the last 48 hours have been incredible in MLB. 10 All-Stars trading teams. And right at the deadline today, how about this? The Giants, not to be left out in the race in the NL West, pick up Chris Bryant. So the Cubs, a total fire sale. Everything's available. The Cubs no longer have a face of the franchise. I guess it's catcher Wilson Contreras, now the face of the Cubs franchise. Javi Baez gone to the Mets. Chris Bryant gone to the Giants. Anthony Rizzo gone to the Cubs. And how about Craig Kimbrel? Not to the Dodgers. Craig Kimbrel traded to the White Sox to help that Chicago Southside bullpen. Not too often the Cubs and White Sox made a trade. They did a few years ago. But they make a deal for Craig Kimbrel. So the Cubs have traded Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, and Kimbrel. And I know Cubs fans are not too happy. I talked with Chuck Esposito, the Red Rock Sportsbook Director, today. Chuck has moved from Sunset to Red Rock. That's official now. He's always been a Cubs fan, and he is ticked off about the Cubs trading every star player on the roster, essentially. And Chris Bryant, it looked like, might be the leftover, the face of the franchise, but the Cubs are going to totally rebuild now. All the pieces, key pieces from that 2016 World Series team are history. And Anthony Rizzo, I'm not sure he's going to re-sign with the Yankees in the offseason, but he's going to be in the lineup tonight for the Yankees. And so is Joey Gallo. So we'll talk about that. We're going to break down every baseball game on tonight's card in the last half hour of today's show. The New York Post, as I predicted yesterday, would push that 14-0 loss to the Rays into page 5 and bury it. And on the cover would be Rizzo and Gallo, and that's it today. The headline on the New York Post, going for it. And my question, I guess, is what are the Yankees going for exactly? Are they going for the wild card? Because they're probably not going to go for the division win. I don't think they're going to be able to jump the Rays and the Red Sox, who, by the way, meet tonight at the Trop in Tampa. I don't think the Yankees really have much of a shot to overtake those two teams and win the American League East. The Yankees do have a decent shot to get to the wild card, but you don't make all these big deals just to get to the wild card, because that's sudden death, and that could be immediate in the wild card. You get knocked out, you have a bad game, you're done. You don't make all these deals just to sneak into the wild card. I think the Yankees have to make these deals with an eye on 2022. They had to remake the lineup. They had no left-handed power in the lineup at all. Of course, Gallo strikes out too much. We know that. Mike Stanton is obviously the guy. Giancarlo Stanton is the guy who strikes out the most in that lineup. And you don't want too many swing and miss guys. But the Yankees had to get some left-handed power. The only left-handed bat they had in the lineup was Brett Gardner for much of the season. So now you get two guys in there who can swing for the fences and drive in runs from the left-handed side of the plate. Joey Gallo and Anthony Rizzo. I think those are great pickups for the Yankees. No matter what happens here in the second half of the season, at least Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman are starting to remake a lineup that's been seriously flawed with that short right-handed porch. The Yankees had to add some left-handed power. So they do that with Gallo and Rizzo. I like what the Yankees did. I don't think they had to give up too much. The Dodgers, the Padres, and the Giants. How about that in the NL West? Oh, by the way, a former Cub, Kyle Schwarber, also went to the Red Sox. So you got another piece in the American League East. I forgot to mention, Kyle Schwarber goes to Boston. And the Blue Jays picked up, made a couple key pickups as well that we'll talk about later in the show. So it's an arms race in the American League East, and obviously the same is going on in the NL West. The Dodgers picked up Mad Max Scherzer yesterday in a blockbuster deal. When it looked like the Padres were going to make the deal for Scherzer, the Dodgers came over the top and got Scherzer and Trey Turner. Now, this is a key. Don't look at this as a Mad Max Scherzer trade, because Trey Turner is going to be a big part of this. He's 28. He was an all-star this year. He can play the infield and outfield. With Corey Seager injured, the Dodgers need somebody like Turner who can fill a variety of spots in the field and in the lineup. And how about this about Trey Turner? Since the beginning of the 2020 season, he's batting .326 with 30 homers, 33 steals, and 154 games. He's been one of the better players in baseball. Trey Turner and Max Scherzer, great pickups, both for the Dodgers. And the Giants, I think, did what they could today. The Giants right now 3-up on the Dodgers in the NL West. The Giants pick up Chris Bryant, which is a really big move in San Francisco. We come back. Wes Reynolds joins the show next. VSiN College Football Betting Guide is out. Start your football season on the right foot with our expert analysis and picks for conference champions, Heisman hopefuls, playoff teams, and a lot more. You get power ratings for every team. A lot of numbers in this guide, a lot of analysis as well. Now is also a great time to get your all-access VSiN subscription, including our college and pro football betting guides, along with everything we offer for the entire football season. That's everything. You can get the college betting guide for $19.99 or start a free trial for all access at vsin.com/subscribe. Wes Reynolds, one of the key players to help producing this VSIN College Football Betting Guide, joins us now. And Wes, we've had a lot to talk about today, a lot of news in the NFL, MLB, NBA, but we're going to go to golf with you because that's our favorite topic when we're on the show together. And my favorite player, he's still my favorite player, even though I get irritated at him sometimes, is Xander Schauffele. And last night I watched the Olympics in Japan, and Schauffele made a big run on the back nine last night, fired a 63 to seize the lead in the Olympics at the halfway point. He goes into the third round with a one-stroke lead at 11 under. What did you take away from the second round last night?
Yeah, and you certainly said it, Matt, with Xander. And he was the guy after round one when people were asking, okay, who do you recommend on the in-play? Mm-hmm. And you know what? I don't think Xander's in bad position at 3-under, despite the fact that he didn't gain any with his irons. Well, he gained a ton with his irons yesterday. He gained about 4.5 shots with the approach and also gained off the tee as well, gained almost a shot off the tee. So the ball striking was on point when you shoot 63, and he is going to end up as the round two leader because there are still about five groups or so that are going to have to finish here at about 3:45 our time out here on the West Coast. So they're going to get that started. And then for round three, what they're going to do, they're going to do split tees with the 60 players. They're going to have half go off number one, half go off number 10 to try to play a little bit of catch up here.
Which they definitely have to. Carlos Ortiz from Mexico. I played a player from Mexico, but it was not Ortiz. I've got Abraham Answer, who's seven strokes back at Schauffele. Carlos Ortiz, one stroke back at 10-under. Hideki Matsuyama, obviously a Japanese favorite, is 8-under, three strokes back of Xander. All right, Wes, I did ask you yesterday, who do you think is going to make a move? And you said Schauffele. You nailed it. Schauffele fires a 63. It's definitely his trend to, when he goes low, to go higher the next day. So he'll probably take a step back today. Who do you think goes really low in round three?
Yeah, if I were looking in play today, Matt, and I wasn't already involved, where I would look, and Matsuyama, who you mentioned, by the way, still has two holes left to finish. He is currently at 8-under par. Another guy that has one hole left to finish is Paul Casey, who even if he pars 18, is going to be 7-under par and just four back. And you can get him anywhere, I think, from like 16 to 18 to 1 is basically the average I've seen. Leads the field in greens and regulation, 31 to 35 so far. So has one more to go. Look, we know the ball striking is good, but is he going to be birdie Casey or is he going to be par Casey? And sometimes par Casey rears its ugly head, but at 16-1, I still think some value. And also Victor Hovland, who's at 5-under par. He's down there. I think I saw BetMGM had him at like 30-1. You know, six back, really, you can overcome that, as we saw what happened with Xander yesterday going low with 63. Mito Pereira, the young man from Chile, got in with the 65. So these rounds are going to be out there all 4 days, Matt, on this golf course. But it just is all about how you time these things. Rory McIlroy got right back in this thing yesterday. Shane Lowry got back in this, despite the fact that he was all over the place with his driver yesterday. So you've got some guys, I think, you know, five, six back, I definitely do not think is out of it at this standpoint.
Yeah, you're right. Rory fired a 66, Lowry a 65. Each of those guys seven strokes back with Paul Casey. You talked me into a bet on Paul Casey at 16-1. So hopefully he makes a move. I did bet Schauffele at 8-1. I hate to bet players at double digits, but I said if he wins this thing and I don't bet him, I'm going to be ticked off. So we got a few guys in action heading into the weekend, Wes, in the Olympics golf. All right, quickly, I didn't get a chance to hit on this with JVT, but the next Olympic basketball games are Saturday. Team USA in action against the Czech Republic and France playing Iran, and then we get to the medal round. We get to the tournament. This is still pool play. Wes, do you have any opinions, observations on the two Saturday games involving France or Team USA?
Yeah, if I'm looking at Team USA, I would actually want to lay it here at 24. There's still some 23.5 out there, but I was disappointed a little bit with the Czech Republic. I thought maybe that was a good spot against them, against France, rather, in the last game. And they had a solid first half, and then they end up losing by 20, you know, because you thought maybe this France, it's going to be a little letdown. You beat Team USA after you lost four exhibition games coming into Tokyo. But there's a reason the Czech Republic is rated 12th in the FIBA world ranking. You've got just the one NBAer, that's Thomas Satoransky for the Chicago Bulls, only had 14 on Wednesday. Jan Vesely, remember, he was a former first-round pick for the Wizards. He's a key contributor. This is a team that does have size, the Czech Republic, with Vesely, Andrej Balvin, Patrick Auda, who you may remember from Seton Hall. They have some big guys, but I just don't think that they're quick enough. And I think USA kind of did find their stroke a little bit from the three-point line. They were 19-39 against France, only 10-32 against, or 19-39 in their second game against Iran, 10-32 in the first game against France. So Team USA, I know that's a big number, but I'd rather be laying it than taking it.
All right. Follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. He's the official tweeter of VSiN on all Olympics coverage. So everything you want to know about the Olympics, you can check out Wes's Twitter page. Wes, this is not the Olympics here in the final 90 seconds, but Gold Cup soccer is going to get a lot of attention here in Vegas this weekend. This game at Allegiant Stadium off the strip sold out in about 15 minutes. The USA, a 1-0 winner last night over Qatar, and Mexico, 2-1 over Canada in a dramatic finish. So the Gold Cup soccer final Sunday night in Vegas. Who do you like?
Yeah, Mexico's getting the money, and I agree with it. They have the stronger roster here from this standpoint. They actually got outplayed in about the last 30 minutes of regulation against Canada. Canada had the pressure on, but they go in the extra time. Mexico gets the goal in the 98th minute. One thing I do know, maybe the Allegiant Stadium security staff is getting paid time and a half on Sunday, because these tend to get a little rowdy between Mexico and USA, especially in the stands and chippy on the pitch. So I do like Mexico in this spot. Get some revenge a little bit from that Nations Cup match they lost to Team USA in Denver earlier a couple months ago.
It's actually going to be a great atmosphere in Vegas Sunday night for that Mexico-USA soccer match. So how would you bet it, Wes?
I'm going to take Mexico at the plus, like, 125, plus 130 out there.
All right, that's Wes Reynolds. Hang on. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring you back to talk about the NBA draft, the best and worst, the MLB trade deadline, and also maybe your best bets in MLB for tonight. Back here in a couple minutes on My Guys in the Desert. OddsTrader.com studio at South Point Hotel and Casino. Go to OddsTrader.com, download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up-to-the-second info you need, real-time bet tracking, live in-game odds and stats, and a lot more at OddsTrader.com. Wes Reynolds joins us now. He's the host of Long Shots, the number one rated golf betting show on the planet, along with Brady Cannon and myself. You can read him in Point Spread Weekly every week. And he's also a co-host here on My Guys in the Desert, Lombardi Line, and basically every show on VSiN. Follow him on Twitter, at WesReynolds1. I don't think, Wes, you ever get much vacation time. Are you going to take some time off before the football season?
I am, Matt. I'm going to put my foot down, and I'm going to take a week off at some point here in August before we get all the contests going and everybody comes into town to sign up for that super contest, that Circus Sports Million. So a lot of our friends will be in town. So sometime in August, I'm going to bounce for a week.
All right, Wes, let's recap the NBA draft last night. I got Tim Murray and John Von Tobel's high five, the five favorite picks from the draft last night. I'm going to get your best and the worst, what you really liked, what you didn't like at all from the NBA draft last night, whether it be in the first round or the second round.
Yeah, I'll start a little bit up top here, because I guess kind of the curveball, even though I thought it had a very good chance of happening, with Scottie Barnes going number four to Toronto. So what does that do? That slides Jalen Suggs to number five with the Orlando Magic. And I really like what the Magic actually did in this draft, because there's a theory, and we kind of talked about this yesterday with the Marlins, Matt, when they dealt Starling Marte to the A's for Jesus Luzardo. You know, there's such a theory of as get good on one side of the ball. And, like, the Marlins are getting good on one side with really good young pitching. They can't hit a lick, but they can pitch. Whereas Orlando, you look at what they drafted not only with Suggs, but also Franz Wagner, two of the better defenders, really, in this draft. So if you add to what they have, you add that with Jonathan Isaac, who's going to come back at forward. Markelle Fultz, I think his defense has improved. He may not be what everybody expected him to be when he was that number one pick for the Sixers, but this is an Orlando team that I think is going to be able to guard and be able to have some lower scoring games. Now, offensively, they're going to be a little bit challenged. You also add to the fact that they do have some young guards, RJ Hampton, and of course, Cole Anthony, the son of former UNLV Rebel Greg Anthony. This Orlando team, I think just kind of waiting and being patient and just playing the draft board ended up working out for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I like Suggs too. I thought Suggs to the Magic was a solid pick, and I think Tim Murray, JVT, we all agreed on that. It's unanimous. The Celtics, by the way, trading Tristan Thompson to the Atlanta Hawks for Chris Dunn, a 2023 second-round pick. There's been a lot of movement. The Lakers trade, they pick up Russell Westbrook, deal three players and a pick to the Wizards. Most of us here at VSiN do not like this trade for the Lakers. How about the trades last night, Wes? Did you approve, thumbs up or thumbs down, what the Lakers did acquiring Westbrook?
Thumbs down for me, okay. Actually. I know everybody kind of sees, you know, Russell Westbrook is that shiny toy that's going to mess around and get a lot of triple-doubles, but he's also going to mess around and miss a lot of three-point shots. The guy hasn't shot over 30% in a couple years. And keep in mind, though, this is also Russell Westbrook's fourth team in 4 years. There's a reason why he's getting dealt around. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is a guy who can put up numbers for you, but can he win for you? And I'm just not so sure. We were talking about this yesterday on this very program. Lakers need some shooters, and I think when that deal got – potential deal, rather, got put out for Buddy Hield, it's like, well, that's kind of a good deal. And I know Woj might have fell for the head fake there on that rumor, but I kind of thought, you know what? That might be a better deal for the Lakers if they could get Buddy Hield and Chip Harrell and Kuzma to Sacramento. And Sacramento is kind of putting together some decent young talent, too. This might be the year where they're going to get back in the playoffs, so I'll be looking to back them at plus money.
Yeah, Woj might have got fooled on that one, but I'm not going to knock him. The guy gets far more right than he gets wrong.
Right.
I think a lot of people enjoyed taking a shot at him yesterday on Twitter, but come on. I mean, the guy's really good at his job, and that's going to happen occasionally. I talked with Doug Kazarian and JVT about this. We're all surprised that the San Antonio Spurs went with Josh Primo, the freshman guard from Alabama, with the 12th pick. That was a major reach. The guy averaged 8 points a game and shot 38% from three. I watched him. I wasn't blown away. Maybe the Spurs see something we don't see. That was one thing I did not like in the draft. Wes, give me one thing you did not like last night.
Yeah, I would be with you on that too, Matt. But look, the Phoenix Suns, everybody thought they reached when they took Cam Johnson 11 a couple years ago. And look at what has happened. He was a key player, at least in the mm-hmm. Western Conference Championship team. But with the Knicks, in terms of their picks, I'm not really sure they did the right thing. They traded 19 to Charlotte. They get a future protected first, and then they moved back to get Quentin Grimes in that trade from the Clippers. Their second-round picks have a chance, but really what it's going to be, the Knicks are going to have to be good in the offseason. They've got $50 million in cap space, so I can't knock them for the draft too much. I'll knock the 76ers a little bit because they were asking for a king's ransom for Ben Simmons, and he's just not – you're just not going to get that type of deal right now where you're going to get – Andrew Wiggins and James Wiseman and two number ones and then a future number one. You got to, I guess, slow your roll a little bit if you're Philadelphia. You're just not going to get that because Ben Simmons right now is at the bottom in terms of his value in the market.
All right, let's talk MLB trade deadline. It's been a wild 48 hours, Wes, and right at the deadline, the Cubs sold off the final face of the franchise, Chris Bryant. He goes to the Giants. Anthony Rizzo went to the Yankees. Javi Baez went to the Mets. Craig Kimbrell went to the White Sox, not the Dodgers. There's been a lot of movement. 10 All-Stars on the move here at the trade deadline. And what do you think is the most positive move? Which moves do you think really aren't going to matter as we head down the stretch here in the final 2 months of the baseball season? I do like the Giants picking up Chris Bryant. I thought they had to make something. They had to make something happen after the Dodgers made big moves and the Padres made minor moves. At least the Giants made something happen. They had one of the best third basemen in baseball in Chris Bryant.
Yeah, and I think he really fits there. It was kind of like we were waiting to see, well, what about the Giants? And then it was like the San Francisco Giants have now entered the chat, whereas everybody else made their moves, and then they strike at the gun here getting mm-hmm. Chris Bryant. I think it's a very good move. This Giants team is not going away. The team that I think has got to play some catch-up here really are the Padres. Now, I like getting Daniel Hudson. I think that's a strengthening of strength, basically, with this bullpen. Best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball is the San Diego Padres, and they have absolutely had to be because we talked about this yesterday. The San Diego Padres, in terms of their pitching staff, counting Ian Kennedy going that seven innings of shutout ball against Colorado last night, the San Diego Padres have 47 starts that have gone past the fifth inning outside of five innings pitched. So that's the lowest in Major League Baseball. And that's what I do worry about with this Padres team, is that bullpen is going to be taxed at the end, and they're going to be fighting and scrambling to play catch up. You didn't really see them add kind of a frontline starter here. They thought they had Scherzer. We thought he was going there when we were discussing right at this time yesterday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Turns out the Dodgers go ahead and swoop him away. And Dodgers and Yankees, the two highest payrolls, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Well, Giants, three games up on the Dodgers, 5.5 on the Padres. Look at the standings today and take a picture, and then see how things change 2 months from now as we head to the playoffs after all these major moves at the trade deadline. By the way, that Dodgers blockbuster deal, it's not just Max Scherzer. Trey Turner is a huge part of that, and he's going to play a key role for the Dodgers down the stretch. If you look at the Westgate Superbook right now, Dodgers in the driver's seat in the National League, the favorites plus 140. Padres and Giants each have 5-1. The Brewers at 7-1, but the Dodgers are still the clear favorites after the big moves they made at the deadline. And Corey Seager headed back from injury, and you'd think Cody Bellinger is going to get healthy down the stretch. Now, the Yankees made some big moves. They pick up two of the best left-handed power bats in baseball, Joey Gallo, Anthony Rizzo, both expected to be in the lineup tonight, Wes, when the Yankees play the Marlins in Miami. And we've seen a line move on this game since the overnight number. And I think that's basically because the Yankees are going to have their big guns in the lineup tonight, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think the buyback, though, is starting to come, and I actually agree with the buyback here. 155 at a faraway place is the highest I'm seeing here. Look, we often talk about this, Matt. It doesn't matter which sport. Bettors like to bet what they heard or what they saw last. And what did they see and hear last? They have Joey Gallo and now Anthony Rizzo in this lineup for the New York Yankees. They did pick up a back-end starter in Andrew Heaney. We'll see how a fly ball pitcher does in Yankee Stadium. I'm not sure how that's going to work. But nevertheless, they're in Miami. Obviously, Miami sold off a little bit, but I think got a good return with Luzardo, even though his year has been down. But I do kind of like the Marlins here. I like what Derek Jeter and Kim Ng are doing down there in Miami. Like I said about the Magic when we were discussing the NBA draft winners and losers last night, I think the Marlins are getting good on one side of the ball. You've got Sixto Sanchez, who's going to come back from injury. Lopez and Alcantara are rotation starters. They've got a lot of really good young arms in this organization. So get good in terms of the pitching. And it's really, Matt, just kind of fading some of these moves. You got to see it in New York tonight. Carlos Carrasco making his first start of the season. This opened about 110 in the overnight, and we're getting almost to 140 territory on the New York Mets over the Cincinnati Reds, who, by the way, kind of were very quiet at the deadline, made some minor moves to help the bullpen, but they're just waiting for healthy bodies to get back in. But I think maybe you can go against some of these moves tonight, that these teams that were the real winners in the trade deadline, because everybody wants to bet them right away, maybe hold off a day or two, and you can go ahead and fade those moves tonight.
Yeah, by the way, the Yankees did not get your guy Kyle Schwarber. He is headed to the Boston Red Sox. That was that broke last night. Zach Thompson going to start with for the Marlins, 6'7" right-hander. He's got a 106 whip in his 106 whip in seven starts. He's going to go for the Marlins. Last night, the Yankees were minus 150. Now as high as minus 170 at a lot of spots. And Wes thinks the dog is live there. Wes, in the last 20 seconds, how high is your level of concern about Carson Wentz, who's the Colts quarterback, out indefinitely with a foot injury?
It is high. We'll see if maybe they kick the tires on Nick Foles here, if the Bears release him or elect to trade him. But with Jacob Eason and Sam Ehlinger as your backups, not a lot of depth there in Indianapolis.
All right, Wes, appreciate the time, man. Thanks a lot, and good luck in the golf this weekend.
You got it, pal. Thanks for having me.
At WesReynolds1 on Twitter. Thanks to Mike Pritchard and obviously JVT and Wes Reynolds. Hour number two up next. Stay tuned, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.